I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 1:34 p.m. on Thursday, March 28th, 2019. Present today, we have Representative Knopp, Representative LeBon, Representative Tilton, Representative Carpenter, Co-Chair Wilson, Representative Ortiz, Representative Vice Chair Johnston, Representative Josephson, Representative Merrick, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. Just as a reminder, folks could please mute their cell phones. And at this meeting, the committee will be considering the adoption of a committee substitute for House Bill 39, which is the operating budget, and also the mental health budget. These committee substitutes were constructed using the closeout reports from each of the finance subcommittees and changes made to language sections compared to the governor's February 13th budget. We will be adopting these committee substitute as our working document, and we will be considering amendments next week. So I just wanted to make sure that folks are understanding of the fact that we're not moving the final budget today. At least I wanted to say that for folks who might be watching on TV. The committee is simply adopting these committee substitutes as working drafts to work off of and work base our amendments on next week. So with that, to put the work draft before us, I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move that the House Finance Committee adopt committee substitute for House Bill 39 Finance, work draft 31-GH1905/R, Bruce dated 3/28/19 as our working document.
And we have an objection. Representative Tilton, would you like to speak to your objection?
I object for the purposes of discussion.
Okay. And is there anything, I guess, that anybody would like to say, Representative Wilson?
So this is just our working document just to put in front of us so that in a minute we'll do a motion to actually put it in front so that we will be able to write amendments to it due on Monday at 3 p.m.
I'll remove the objection.
And was there a further Representative Josephson?
just the co-chair's comment. I'm just registering that. So our deadline is Monday at 3 p.m. this coming Monday.
Right. But right now we just have the working, Mr. Co-Chair. So we have, this is just a working document in front of us right now. Mm-hmm. In a minute, as soon as we get done with the objections, we will actually move it in front of us so that we will have a document to write amendments to, mm-hmm, if one chooses to do Monday at 3 p.m. in Co-Chair Foster's office.
Representative Ortiz.
Just for my own clarification, thank you. This document does not reflect the recommendation language portion of our submitted subcommittee reports, correct? For example, I can think of one significant recommendation which would amount to a cost reduction that I put forward, but that recommendation wouldn't be a part of the CS, correct?
Let's take a brief at ease. House Finance back on record. And so just for clarification, we're adopting House Bills 39 and 40 as our working document, and then after this we will have staff come up and explain what's in them. So with that, I believe Representative Ortiz's clarification question was answered. Are there any other objections to adopting this as our working draft so that we have something to work off of? Any other questions? I don't see any. So if there are no objections, we have adopted the committee substitute as our working draft for House Bill 39, and that is the operating budget. So the next budget that we would adopt as our working document would be the mental health budget. And with that, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move that the House Finance Committee adopt committee substitute for House Bill 40, Finance Work Draft 31 GS 1901 Can we have an at ease?
At ease. House Finance back on record, and Representative Wilson, if you could restate your motion.
I will, thank you. Mr. Co-Chair, I move that the House Finance Committee adopt committee substitute for House Bill 40, Finance Work Draft 31-GH1901, /R, Bruce, dated 3/28/19, as our working document.
Okay, and seeing no objection, we've adopted the committee substitute as our working draft for House Bill 40. So now that we have the two bills in front of us, the work drafts, I would like to ask Mr. Brody Anderson, as well as Amanda Ryder, Legislative Finance Analyst, if you could both please come up and explain what is in the two work drafts.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Pinnock.
What was that version of the work draft she adopted, please?
So the first one for the operating budget, the version
HB
is...
HB 40, sir. HB 40.
For House Bill 40?
Yeah, that work draft, the number. Did she adopt version R or S? Which one?
R. 31-GH1901, /R, Bruce, dated 3/28/19.
Yeah, and I got version S, so I would like us to operate off the same version.
Oh. Let's take a brief at ease. We'll take a brief at ease while the clerks make sure that we've got the right paperwork in front of us. House Finance back on record. So for the viewing public, to clarify, the versions that we will be working off of the operating budget is 31-GH1905 /R. Again, that's for the operating budget, House Bill 39. And then for the mental health budget, that is House Bill 40. The version that we will be working off of is 31-GH1901 /S, as in Sierra.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
I'd like to restate my motion. Third time's a charm. Mm-hmm. I move that the House Finance Committee adopt committee substitute for House Bill 40, Finance Work Draft 31-GH1901 /S, Bruce, dated 3/28/19, as our working document.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. And I see no objections, so HB 40 version S has been adopted and is before us as a working draft. And Mr. Anderson, if you could explain what's in the documents.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. For the record, my name is Brody Anderson, staff to Representative Foster.
And for the record, I'm Amanda Ryder with Legislative Finance Division.
Before the committee today is committee substitute for HB 39 and HB 40 that reflects all of the actions of the subcommittees and the changes made to the language section compared to the governor's proposed budget introduced on February 13th. The House Finance Committee substitute reflects an agency operations, which is more the day-to-day state government function, a total budget of $7,581,400,400 found in the document number N1 of agency summaries. This includes the following funds: $2,671,870,800 in federal funds, $1,508,227,800 in other funds, $758,600,000 $83,600 in designated general funds and $2,642,618,200 in unrestricted general funds. The unrestricted general fund spend reflects a reduction of $21,761,500 from the FY20 adjusted base.
I want to say 28.
Excuse me. Correction. That would be a reduction of $28,761,500. The only difference between the House subcommittee reports and the House CS are in the salary adjustments added to each agency, which included the February 13th governor's request of $45.1 million, the March 14th governor's amendments, which included $11.2 million, and the judiciary salary adjustments to match COLA increases received to match the GGU of $1.7 million. The total difference reflected as $12.9 million, which is reflected on the document numbered SA1. When the language has been incorporated, as you can see on the document numbered NL1, the total funds are $10.44 billion. Of that, unrestricted general funds is $4.5 billion. General funds, both numbers and language, as seen on document NL2, is $5.4 billion. Mr. Chairman, if I could move to the differences in the language section, I would ask members to direct their attention to the finance, the document of the comparison document provided in your packet. Something like this. We'll walk through the language section of the bill and the differences provided thereof. Starting on page 2.
Brief at ease.
Take a brief at ease. House Finance back on record. Mr. Henderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Item number one, which will be found on page 2 at the top of the page, starts at section 4. This adds intent that clarifies the amounts appropriated are for the full amounts that will be appropriated in FY20.
Can we go back to page 1 because there's a change too?
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of curious why that change and why we just skipped over it.
For the record, my name is Amanda Ryder with Legislative Finance. This first page just adds the CBR language to the title of the bill because this was not included in Governor in the previous version of the CS. So this there's CBR language later in the bill, so they had to add this to the title of the bill.
Representative Wilson.
So within the language section, we are taking funding from the Constitutional Budget Reserve?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, later on in the bill, there is a reverse sweep. There is some reverse sweep language, which is standard language that's, you know, even if you don't draw any money from the CBR, the CBR sweep language, and we can discuss that, you know, when we get to it, but that is included in this bill.
Perfect. I just want to know whether we were taking funds out of it. Thank you.
And we've got a lot of new folks, and so maybe if we could just do a very, very brief. As I understand it, the reverse sweep is essentially we've got a lot of accounts that are out there that are typically populated with funds, And at the end of the year, that money needs to go back into the CVR, but then you want to repopulate those accounts. And I know it's more complicated than that, but it turns into a real accounting nightmare if the reverse sweep is not done. So the fiscal year ends June 30, 11:59 p.m., and 59 seconds, and all that money goes back into the CVR because that's what statute asks us or requires that we do. But then we repopulate that 2 seconds later on the next day so that all those funds, and it's just a huge accounting nightmare if we don't do that. I don't know if there's a better way to explain that for somebody who isn't familiar with this, just so that folks have an understanding, because they're going to hear this a lot, this reverse sweep.
Mr. Chairman, I think you explained it very well, but is there further questions?
I think maybe I've put it out there for now, and we can talk about it more, but I know that it's something that is confusing to folks every year, and it's we'll come back to it. So, thank you.
Continuing on, the next change we found on page 3. About three quarters of the way down the page, line 24, item number 2. Section 8 deposits the constitutionally required 25% of royalties to the Alaska Permanent Fund. The governor's language had appropriated an additional $71.3 million. The CS deposits the non-constitutionally required portion into the general fund. Item number 3. A and B is found a little bit farther down on line 30. A highlights subsection 8C, which appropriates the POMV payout to the general fund. The permanent fund dividend will be appropriated in the same manner as last year from the general fund. Where 3B, the governor's language had appropriated the non-permanent fund dividend amount of the POMV payout to the general fund. Next change, you'll jump a couple pages to page 6, down towards the bottom of the page. Starting on line 27. Item number 4, section 10F, uses PFC endowment funding for the PCE program versus the governor's request of UGF for this program, unrestricted general fund.
Representative Wilson.
And PCE is power cost equalization. Just trying to make sure everybody understands all of our acronyms.
Through the chair, Representative, that is correct. PCE is the power cost equalization endowment fund, and I will remember to try to use full acronym without acronyms.
And Mr. Anderson, just for the viewing public, can you describe what the governor wanted to do with the fund versus what's currently written in here?
Mr. Chairman, the governor had chosen to pay using general funds to pay for the sweeping the PCE fund as an endowment, the portion of the endowment, and replacing the use of those funds with general funds, and so then allowing the amount of appropriations, the funds, to go elsewhere, ruling them, basically essentially making them general funds.
Correct. So there's $1 billion in the power cost equalization fund, and he wanted to remove the money from the fund, put it into the general fund, which would then make it usable for everything from education to public safety and so forth. However, the payments for the power cost equalization program would still be made, and it would be made out of the general fund. So I just wanted folks to understand that. If I said that incorrectly, please. Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Through the chair, and going back to page 3, with my apologies, the governor's version of the bill on February 13th had essentially established a split to comply with the formula of the PFD, and so we're deleting that pending some later disposition.
Ms. Ryder.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes, that is what occurred. The governor's request had the entire POMV amount, but it had the portion, almost $2 billion, would have gone to the PCE, to the
permanent fund, dividend fund, the PFD fund, and then the remaining, the about, you know, almost $1 billion would have been deposited into the general fund. This CS deposits the entire POMV payout to the general fund, from which, from there, it will be deposited into the permanent fund later, dividend fund.
Thank you.
Turning to item number 5, it's found on page 7, starting at line 6. Item number 5, subsection 10H, appropriates $309,100 from the Alaska Legal Services Fund to the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development for a grant to the Alaska Legal Services Corporation. This is consistent with statute.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this fund, my understanding, only had $10,000 in it a couple weeks ago. So where did the rest of the money come from?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, we're having a little tough time tag-teaming here. The appropriation will occur on July 1st. This is an FY20 appropriation, so regardless of what is in the fund currently, you will have there will be another $309,090 deposited into the fund on July 1st of this year to pay the grant in FY20. That is the amount of filing fees that was received by the court system in FY18.
Follow up. So if I understand you correctly, that the fees that were paid went into the general fund, and by tracking those, you were able to then realize that based on statute, the $309,000 of that went over here. Now, does that shortchange the court system in any fashion?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, it does not shortchange the court system. It is simply a revenue source that is identified. 10% of those filing fees that goes into the general fund will now be used for this purpose. The court system is funded through a different mechanism.
And one more question.
Representative Wilson.
So this fund would actually have now $319,000 because the $10,000 is still in there. So we'd still add them together.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the $10,000, I mean, I don't know what is currently in the fund, but if, it is $10,000 in the fund, by June 30th, that $10,000 may be fully expended. So if the funding is spent by June 30th, then on July 1st, you'll have new money going into the fund, so you'll have another $309,900 that goes into the fund.
That was my final question, but you confused me. So how is that $10,000 going to get spent? Because the grant already went to Alaska Legal Services out of this fund, which left this $10,000 in there. Who else can use this fund besides the grant that went out to Alaska Legal Services?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the funding can't be used unless it's appropriated. So you could increase this appropriation to $319,090, and that way it would fully expend the amount that's in the fund. That would be the way that you can fully expend that amount.
Thank you. I just wanted to make sure that other people weren't in the cookie jar. Thanks.
And just for the viewing audience, this is 10% of filing fees go towards Alaska Legal Services. Is that correct?
Through the chair. Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Representative Josephson?
Through the chair, I have a memory of Representative Klayman carrying a bill, a standalone bill on this issue. I don't think it passed, so we're doing it through the budget, and we'd have to do this every year, which is fine, but am I right about the history of this, that there was an effort to do it by statute?
Through the chair, Representative, I'm not sure about previous legislation that might not have passed. I do know that later on, item number 21, found on page 21, on line 15, not to give out the punchline, but that's where we actually authorize, and it's in accordance to AS 3705-590 is the statute in which makes this authorization of the 10% for filing fees is located.
Okay, thank you.
And Ms.
Ryder?
There was a bill that passed last year, and this is the appropriation.
Thank you.
Mr. Anderson, please proceed.
Item number 6 will be found on page 8. And it'll be off to the side there. Number 6, the CS removed the governor's request for a lapse extension for the Alaska Psychiatric Institute appropriation that was approved in FY18. Item number 7, the CS removed the governor's request for an open-ended appropriation of federal receipts to the Medicaid program. Number 8, the CS removed the governor's FY19 supplemental request for $172.4 million from the SBR to pay for any shortfalls in Medicaid for FY19, FY20, and FY21.
Representative Ortiz.
Mr. Anderson, if you go back to item number 6 on page 8, tell me, explain a little bit more about the impact of that particular deletion.
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, this is an item that we would consider more appropriate to put into the supplemental budget,
okay,
as opposed to the operating budget.
Okay. Thank you. That's all.
And Representative Josephson?
Could the staff could we get a similar explanation on numbers 7 and 8 here?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, item 7 provides open-ended federal receipt authorization to the Department for Medicaid Services, and the decision was made to remove that so that the legislature has authority to approve additional federal receipts that the department may need. You'll understand what happens when they come back in. They can do that through the LBNA, through the RPL process, through LBNA committee. They can receive additional federal receipts if they need federal receipts, or they can come back in next session and request additional federal authority if they need additional federal authority. By removing this language, you're able to see a little bit more clearly what is happening in the health and social services budget, and you'll understand if they need more federal receipts, you'll understand why they need them when you approve them.
And through the chair of representative, on item number 8, the governor had requested in the FY19 supplemental that there be a multi-year appropriation to use the SBR for 3 years, and this is essentially removing that and denying that request for using the SBR.
Okay. Just to follow up,
Representative Josephson,
Mr. Anderson, do you know why the administration would need a multi-year appropriation? My understanding is if the waiver didn't happen for phase two, then the entirety of the SBR would be needed. So do you have, if you know, why the administration sought that?
Through the chair, representative, I would prefer to decline to speak on behalf of the administration.
Thanks.
Ms. Ryder, I don't know if you've got any.
Well, through the chair, Representative Josephson, Legislative Finance believes that there are more transparent ways of funding Medicaid in FY20. This is based on testimony by the Department of Health and Social Services. They have sufficient funding. They have all the funding they need in FY19. And the $15 million supplemental should be sufficient for 19. So to have this appropriation, the effective date be FY19, you have $172 million appropriated in 19 that's then available in 20 and 21. Well, which year is it spent in? It's all 19 money. It makes it very difficult to see what is appropriated and spent in a particular year when you budget like this. So Ledge Finance believes that there are more transparent ways of appropriating money for health and social services for Medicaid, and that if you need the money in FY20, appropriate the money in FY20. If you need it in 21, appropriate it in 21. So it was simply this is not going to have, and it should not have an impact on Department of Health and Social Services. It should not have an impact on Medicaid. It is simply a removal of the funding and appropriate the amount needed in FY20 and then use FY20 funds to pay for it.
Thank you.
And please proceed.
Item number 9 will be found on page 9, about three quarters of the way down the page, off to the side. The CS removed the governor's request for up to $200,000 of statutory designated program receipts in case the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs is short in section 1, the number section. The Department of Military and Veterans Affairs can go to legislative budget and audit if they are short or request additional authorization in section 1 of this bill. Item number 10 is on page 10, starting at line 11. Section 18 adds funding, $700 million from the bond proceeds to purchase oil and gas tax credit certifications. Item number...
I'm sorry, Representative Wilson?
I just want to make sure what this is. So is this assuming that the court case will be successful and this is just the new amount that we would be bonding for?
Through the chair, Representative, that is correct. It's believed that the court case could be settled as early as October, and this would still give time to provide the department the ability to sell bonds.
And a follow-up?
Follow-up.
Could you tell me, this seems to be about $300 million less than what it was last year when the bill passed?
Through the chair, I don't have that answer in front of me.
Ms. Ryder, and to my knowledge, this is the balance of what is outstanding now. Ms. Ryder, is that, I don't know if you've got that number?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have that number. Mr. Teal may have.
Mr. Teal?
And Mr. Chairman, I'm just trying to make the point that we're in better shape than we were when we passed the original legislation, because I know the amount was much higher.
Through the chair, while Mr. Teal gets settled, we did authorize last year the amount was $797 million, is what was authorized in a similar section, and we authorized $100 million to be paid in credits. So that does factor into the decision this year on the $700 million.
Mr. Teal, if you could put yourself on the record.
David Teal, Director of the Legislative Finance Division, and I think the question's probably been answered already, although I recall it was $737 million last year that was appropriated and never used because we didn't sell bonds. We know that we paid off $100 million worth of, or we purchased $100 million worth of credit certificates, and that would lower it to approximately 640 outstanding, but of course more credits are earned as well. So this is just an approximation, but it should cover. There's this $700 million plus $100 million that Mr. Anderson will get to later.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Josephson.
Yes, since we're on this subject, through the chair, Mr. Teal or Mr. Anderson, there was some dispute last year for the first time about what I'll just call the Seaton formula, which was the sort of smaller amount based on actual production tax received, severance tax received, versus the prior formula. This administration wanted to return at least to the prior formula. What does this budget do in terms of paying? Is it simply this, and we're rejecting? The administration had a separate line item of 180 some odd million, as I recall, and I'm just wondering where we stand on that.
Through the chair, Representative, there will be an item under subsection 23H that does appropriate general funds for the purchase of credits, and we could either jump to it or wait. But it does appropriate $70 million of general funds to the oil and gas tax credit fund for individuals that would not participate in the budget program. The CS removes the governor's requested. He had requested $170 million in FY20 and another $84 million for FY19, and he was the request was with ADA receipts. Mm-hmm. So this would remove that and just put a blanket $70 million appropriation for general funds to purchase credits.
Follow up? Since we'll get there anyway, thank you, Mr. Chair. So we're not, we're largely rejecting the concept of taking ADA receipts, or are we taking some ADA receipts?
Through the chair, representative, at this point, we will not be utilizing any of the recommendations that the governor had for ADA receipts.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Ortiz.
As we push further and further down the road, we're expecting a positive decision in perhaps October. Did the benefits of this approach start to be reduced, the benefits to the state start to be reduced as we push it further down the road, or the benefits just generally remain the same?
Mr. Thiel?
Through the chair, the benefits to the state are a difficult question here. The state can pay or can purchase these credits anytime it wants. So as Representative Josephson mentioned, there are two different views of that formula, and that would determine how fast we purchase credits. What we're doing here, I think, is saying it's neither the original interpretation, the maximum $181 million, nor is it the minimum, approximately $50 million. It's just a number in between there that would be used to purchase the credits. Now, I don't know if that gets to your answer or your question yet, or whether you had more on that.
I guess my question was more around the whole, the original idea of advancing the tax, Alaska tax credit certificate bonds, or those bonds. You know, I remember that discussion last year and why it seemed to make a good sense. The people get paid off earlier, they get access to the money, they take the haircut on, 10% of the financing cost of that. So there were those benefits to them. But then obviously we wouldn't have entered it unless there were benefits to us, to the state. My question is, as we move further and further down the road and we wait the decision and whether the decision comes out and all those kinds of things, do those benefits become less or do they generally stay the same?
To that point, Mr. Chairman, the holders of the certificate would get a discounted rate, and it's less advantageous to them now than it would have been if we'd sold the bonds last year because interest rates have gone up. And what this amounts to is that if we buy the certificates according to the statutory formula, we buy them at an undiscounted rate, full face value of the certificates. Under the bond program, whatever we pay for interest rate on those bonds, theoretically, we're going to discount the face value of those certificates so that the state's neutral on this. It's just a choice that the bond, the certificate holders have to participate in the program and get their cash immediately.
Okay.
And it would be discounted or to get full face value by waiting 2 or 3 or 4 years. So theoretically, everyone would be neutral on this, except the state pays interest to the bondholders instead of, and then that's offset by the lower face value of the certificates. So if it works out right and the discount matches the interest rate, then everybody should be neutral. The only real advantage to the state is that you don't have to address this issue every year.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that.
You got a question, Representative Kanaan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, question for Mr. Anderson here. So I'm going to assume with this language, with the bond appropriation, $700 million would pretty much be the balance of what we owe in the tax credits. So is the additional $70 million in appropriation further in the budget document that we haven't addressed yet, is that just to pay the statutory minimum requirement if this bond is not sold? Is that what that $70 million is for?
Through the chair, Representative, the $70 million reflects both when the previous legislation was passed last year and the bond package was approved, or not approved, but authorized through legislation. There has always been a conversation about those credits that the industry might not, the company might not want to utilize the bond. And this was, there has always been some unrestricted general funds designated for non-participants, and this would cover that. And roughly, it's 10% of the outstanding bonds, estimated to be $700 million at this point. So it was basically 10% of the participants might not participate in a bond. So we've set aside money for those purchases.
Representative Kanaan,
follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I want to know if the bond, if the lawsuit's not settled, the bonds aren't sold, is there an appropriation in there to pay the minimum statutory requirement on what we're statutorily required to pay on them credits? Maybe for Mr. Teal.
Mr. Anderson, and then Mr. Teal.
The discussion on through the chair, Representative, the discussion of the statutory minimum or the statutory obligation to pay. Another representative on this committee has discussed the difference between a previous, the net calculation is what they'd call it, which makes it less than the governor's statutory calculation, which would be at this year $181 million. That would be more of a discussion for this committee, and also possibly on the discussion of whether or not that $70 million is enough, or should it go up or should it go down. But that would be a discussion for the finance committee to take on.
Okay, we'll take it up. Thank you.
Did you have anything? Okay. Any other questions on this issue? Seeing none, Mr. Anderson.
Remaining on page 10, lines, starting at line 21, we have item number 11. Section 19B adds $1 million of unrestricted general funds to the Office of the Governor for redistricting costs for fiscal years 20 through fiscal years 23. Next item is on page 11, almost down towards the bottom, starting at line 25. Section 21E adds $4,517,365 of unrestricted general funds for debt service payments for the University of Alaska, various municipal port and harbor projects, and electrical association projects, often referred to as 528 projects. Next item will be a couple pages away. Page 15. Item number 13 starts at line 24. Section 21J1 and 3 incorporates the governor's revised estimates for the international airport bonds.
Mr. Anderson, what page did you say?
Excuse me, page 15, and starting at line, subsection 1 would be line 21 through 23, and then lines 29 and through 31 are subsection 3.
Representative Wilson.
And these bonds are paid through revenue that's generated by the international airports. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, that's correct.
Thank you.
Turning to page 16, item number 14 begins at line 24. subsection 21N appropriates $99,820,500 for school debt reimbursement. Item number 15 begins at line 30. Subsection 21O incorporates a governor's amendment adding an estimated $750,000 of GEO bond funding for expenses for the sale and issuance of a 2012 transportation bonds. Turning a couple pages, get to page 18. Starting at line 21, subsection 23H appropriates up to $70 million of general funds to the oil and gas tax credit fund for individuals that do not participate in the bond purchase program. Once again, the CS removed the governor's requested $170 million in FY20 and the other $84 million of FY19 from ADA receipts.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair on this. So rather than, Mr. Anderson, rather than paying cash, essentially, that our general fund, rather than using ADA receipts, we're paying out of our general fund and leaving ADA harmless.
Through the chair, that is correct. Item number 17 is found starting at line 28. Subsection 23I replaces the governor's requested $30 million of general fund to the community assistant fund with power cost equalization endowment funding. Using this funding source is consistent with existing statute, which has traditionally been done. Item number 18, starting at line 30, is subsection 23J and then continuing on into the next page, K. Funds for FY21 for K-12 and pupil transportation, so this funds FY21 for K-12 and pupil transportation with a delayed effective date of July 1, fiscal year 21. This removes the governor's section on the prorated FY20 K-12 formula funding.
If I might on this.
That's Representative Josephson, then Ortiz, then Johnston.
Through the chair, Mr. Anderson. We've talked about how the amounts in, I think, House Bill 287, but essentially the foundation formula or BSA and the $30 million one-time money were not vetoable and that the request was for repeal of those forward-funded amounts. These amounts are different. These were not forward-funded. Am I right about that?
The current language in the CS, through the chair representative, would essentially carry forward the idea that was presented last year with delayed funding or forward funding the FY21 education budget.
Follow up. So these funds were advance funded or forward funded? Pupil trans was also part of that legislative effort.
Through the chair, representative, FY19 and FY20 were approved for funding in the previous legislation. HB 287. We have removed the portion of the governor's bill that prorated the FY20 K-12 funding formula. We've removed that, and then the CS reflects a forward funding of the FY20 education formula.
I think the answer is yes, but I'm not sure.
Maybe if I, the idea behind what we're doing is last year, what the legislature did is forward fund education, mm-hmm. and therefore this year, if we don't insert language regarding education, because it's already been forward funded last year, mm-hmm. then it's not subject to a veto. Mm-hmm. So education for this year should be protected, and we want to do the same thing for next year, and that is forward fund the following year's education
okay.
budget.
Okay.
Is that Representative Ortiz and then Johnston?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And you say forward fund for last year, we forward funded for FY20.
Right.
Does that include the $30 million at this point?
That was an extra appropriation, and either Mr. Anderson or Ms. Ryder, do you want to?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, last year there were three things that happened that the governor's actually kind of attempted to address in his bill. Number one, there was the forward funding of the K-12 formula funding. Then there was a $30 million outside the formula appropriation for FY20. And then there was a $19.5 million capitalization of the best practices curriculum funds. So there were those three appropriations that impacted FY20. Well, the governor then in the appropriation bill submitted wanted to repeal all three of those and replaced the K-12 funding with a prorated funding of about 23% less for K-12. The $30 million was just repealed and gone. And then so was the $19 million curriculum practices fund. I know I'm botching the name of that fund, but thankfully you all know what I'm talking about. So in this particular bill, the legislature, I mean, this bill, it does not impact 20 funding at all, other than you will see a section that does repeal the curriculum funding later. That was accepted by the governor, and Mr. Anderson will talk about that later. All other FY20 funding is held harmless in this bill. It's not addressed, which means it's funded. But this appropriation forward funds in like manner of what it did last year, the FY21 K-12 and pupil transportation formula.
And Representative Johnston?
Thank you. My question was answered.
Okay.
And any further questions, Mr. Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Turning our attention to page 19, item number 19, beginning on line 5. Section 23L appropriates $39,389,000 of unrestricted general funds to the REA school fund, which is the regional
education attendance area.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, that. With the addition of the school debt reimbursement in section 21N, the REA funding needs to be added to ensure equity.
Representative Wilson.
Okay, so then, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe I misunderstood then on page 16. I mean, I hate to go backwards, but on number 14, where we're doing the school construction of $99,820,500. So is the list that's done by the Department of Education where all the districts put in, and it has to do with more maintenance versus this, the one you just read has to do with construction?
Right.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the subsection number, item number 14, page 16, and that's school debt reimbursement. That this pays the statutory amount of the school debt reimbursement that communities bond for. This next section, subsection page 19, item number 19, that's the amount that statutorily goes toward the regional educational attendance area, and there is a statutory formula that says if you pay X amount for school debt reimbursement for municipalities, et cetera, then you need to also pay another percentage for the REAAs. So because you have added the school debt reimbursement, you now need to add the REAA to be consistent with statute.
Thank you.
Mr. Anderson.
Next item, item number 20, will be found on page 21. At the top of the page off to the side. governor had requested transferring $60 million from the Community Assistance Fund to the general fund, and this has been removed from the CS. Community assistance will be provided through using power cost equalization endowment funds, which was referenced earlier in the bill.
And that is part of the PCE program that was written in by statute a few years ago, and so it's nothing new, I guess.
That is correct, Representative. Mr. Chairman. Item number 21 is off to the side as well, about the middle of the page. Per statute, section 24C appropriates the amount equal of 10% of the filing fee. Fees received by the Alaska court system, estimated to be $309,000 and $309,090 to the Civil Legal Service Fund to be used for grants to organizations that provide civil legal services to low-income individuals. This is the appropriating part of what was discussed earlier. Turning to page 22. Item number 22 starts at line 7. Consistent with statute, subsection 24F appropriates any remaining power cost equalization endowment funding after appropriations are made to the PCE program and to community assistance fund have been made to the renewable energy grant fund. There isn't expected to be much or if anything remaining after those payouts, but if they are, this this is consistent with statute that the remaining funds would be offered to the Renewable Energy Grant Fund. Item number 23, on the next page, 23, off to the side. The CS removes the governor's requested appropriating $10.8 million from the passenger vessel gaming and gambling tax account to the Alaska Capital Income Fund.
Representative Wilson.
Mr. Chairman, can you tell me what the Alaska Capital Income Fund, what do we do with that money?
Through the chair, Representative, the Capital Income Fund primarily funds deferred maintenance projects throughout the state.
Thank you.
I see no further questions. Mr. Anderson.
Item number 24 on page 24. Starting on line 20. Section 26 is updated to reflect the approval of the Alaska Correctional Officers Association collective bargaining agreement.
Representative Wilson.
Can you please, thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you please tell us what the agreement was? Was it 0-0-0? Was it 3%, 5%? What was the actual agreement that we're agreeing to?
Through the chair, I would have to get back to you on that question.
I would like to know. So it was in mediation last I had heard, but since we're agreeing to it, I'd like to know what the terms are that we're agreeing to.
Ms. Ryder, do you have any?
Well, through the chair, Representative Wilson, I don't know, but we would be happy to get that answer back to you.
And I would hope at some point, Mr. Chair, that we could put that on the record so that the public knows how we're negotiating our contracts.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, on this item, does this merely reflect that since February 13th, this CBA or collective bargaining agreement has been finalized? Is that essentially all that's happened?
Through the chair, Representative, that is correct. The Alaska Correctional Officers Association contract negotiation was agreed upon and settled after the March 14th amendments from the governors.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to make sure I'm not picking on one group. If we could actually find out, only because this was in red, but in this particular salary benefit adjustments, we actually have seven different agreements that are all brand new to this budget. If we could find out what the terms are on all those, I just picked out the red part. So not picking on anybody, just wanting to know what our new agreements look like. Thank you.
Please proceed.
Just
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, on these matters, as long as a contract has been entered into, regardless of the administration, it sort of has to make its way into this budget. Am I right?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, that's correct. This language simply states that the appropriations that are made in Section 1, which were rolled into the CS, are Section 1 includes the appropriations for these bargaining unit contracts, and those appropriations are valid unless the bargaining unit members do not approve of if they don't ratify the contracts. Then in the past, there have been some bargaining units that have not ratified the contract, and so those appropriations are then removed from Section 1. So this just says this is in Section 1, and if the agreements are not ratified by the collective bargaining unit themselves, the money is removed from Section 1.
Thank you.
Okay. Please proceed.
Item number 25 will be found on page 25. Starting at line 19, Section 27A adds payments to communities of $21.7 million for fisheries business tax and another $6.7 million for the fisheries resource landing tax. Item number 20.
Representative Ortiz.
So, to put it another way, the way that those landing taxes and business taxes have been distributed will continue following past practice. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that is correct.
Thank you.
And just for the viewing audience, the governor had wanted to, right now 50% of those taxes go to the state, 50% go to the local municipality where the tax is applied. Right now the proposal had been to take all that money from the municipalities, that other 50%, bring that into the state treasury, and we're saying would like to keep that with local municipalities. Is that correct?
That is correct, Chairman.
Please proceed.
Item number 26 starts at line 26. The section 27B reverts to traditional language for refunding aviation fuel tax or surcharges to the local governments. Turning the page to 26. Item number 27 starts at line 13. Section 29's add reverse sweep language, both for FY20 and for FY21. Item number 28, there's two parts, A and B. The CS removes off to the side there. You'll see that the CS removes the governor's repeal of FY20 K-12 appropriations. This would have repealed the $30 million of outside the formula funding, the entire K-12 foundation formula funding for FY20. However, the CS does accept the repeal of the governor's FY19 $19.5 million to the Curriculum Improvement and Best Practices Fund. Item number 29 reflects Section 30, extends the lapse date for the FY19 $27 million appropriation to pay for oil and gas tax credit bonds for debt service. And Mr. Chairman, that concludes the major changes throughout the language section, besides the retroactivity clauses and the lapsing dates, or the effective dates, excuse me.
Great, thank you. Is there anything else that you had?
Mr. Chairman, I would just like to clarify that the mental health bill, HB 40, is part of the reports. We rolled them all into the operating budget reports. So despite the fact that this has two bills, HB 39 and 40, all amendments that you make, you can do one amendment. You don't need to amend the mental health bill for any operating items separately. You can, unless you want to add a capital mental health project. And in addition, we are going to be posting reports to the web. We will have the bill to the web, both bills on the web. So you can refer to that if you're looking for budget structure, et cetera. And don't be alarmed if you see the governor's numbers changing, because as the governor submits amendments along the way, we add them to the government plus column. And the governor has just submitted, new amendments last night. We have not had a chance to incorporate those in our columns. So over the next day or two, the governor's numbers will be changing. So don't be alarmed if you see the governor's numbers change over the next 24 hours.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So why would we not wait to see if we pass those amendments before we would add them into his budget? Mm-hmm. Because if they don't pass, I mean, first of all, we're not really any longer looking at this as we put these before us. So I'm just trying to understand why we would add them before they were actually vetted.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, we add everything that the governor has requested to his request. So when we have a governor's amended plus, we want to reflect all items that the governor has requested. So that's just our way of keeping track of all amendments that the governor's requested. It helps us keep track of those amendments, as well as to make accurate comparisons between what the governor's requested and what you decide to approve. And they are his requests.
So although right now our budget is $914,057,300 over the governor's budget, that amount could go up or down depending upon what these amendments are.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, that is correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Ortiz.
And will Ledge Finance be providing all members of the legislature or the finance members of the legislature these delineated amendments that the governor has submitted?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, those amendments will be on our website. They have been also provided from the governor's office to the finance co-chairs, and so we will have, you know, we can have additional amendments on our website too.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and I just wanted to add, we didn't do the numbers section today for folks who might be watching on TV, because on Monday and Tuesday, all of the subcommittee reports were read to the Finance Committee, and so all of the numbers explanations were made on Monday and Tuesday. And so today we're going through the language section and explaining that. Again, for the viewing audience, those are proposals, and they're subject to amendments. And once we get to that process, next week, so I just wanted to state that they're not in stone right now. And let's see here. Before I announce the plan for next week, is there anything else to come for the committee? Seeing none, we would ask that members please submit their amendments to my office by 3 p.m. on Monday, April 1st. And so the subcommittees have had their opportunity to go through and put their fingerprints on the budget and make their amendments. And so now full finance will have that opportunity next week. And we expect that we will have a few days where we're coming in twice a day and maybe going long if we need to, and just to make sure that we're trying to stay on schedule and getting the operating budget out to the floor. So with that, our next meeting is scheduled for tomorrow, Friday, March 29th at 1:30 p.m. And at that meeting, the committee will be considering three of the governor's appointees. And so if there is nothing else to come for the committee, we'll be adjourned at 2:43 p.m. Thank you.